This week on the show, have the Celtics completed their roster? The final piece to a potential championship team may be locked in. Plus, we talk to Brian Scalabrine, who knows a thing or two about Celtics and championships. And why has All-Star Weekend gotten so stale? All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, a special Wednesday edition of the podcast this week, as we were both preoccupied on Monday. It's Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz with you as always. We're powered by CLNS Media. This is a little neat, Lebowitz. Not only on a Wednesday, not only on an afternoon. We are on location at Lasher Park, home of the Lowell Spinners, up in the press box.
We are. I got to come today and check out the game, and this is my first game of the year, of course. 980 WCAP is the official broadcaster of the Lowell Spinners. We do every game home and away. John Leahy does a great job. So I have the credential. I can come anytime I want to. But waking up at 4:30 makes it difficult to come to that 6:30 start. So today, day game, I had to come down. And
day game,
awesome.
Morning game, 11 a.m. start. I was here at 9 o'clock. All right, so we both plugged each our own jobs enough. I am the PA announcer for the Spinners. He works for WCAP. There you go. But we were both up early this morning. So we both got to see, what was it, a 5 a.m. Woj bomb? 4:30 a.m.
Woj
bomb?
I think it was before.
Was it 3 a.m.?
Yeah.
At what time is that in San Antonio?
we need
to get Jesse Feldman on the phone. Kawhi Leonard, finally gone. Pop has gotten rid of his headache. He is in Toronto, swapped for DeMar DeRozan. I know there's some other pieces involved in there as well, but I want to start here. We've talked about the NBA as kind of a middle school cafeteria kind of league, right? There's a lot of emotions. It is friendships and enemies and frenemies and all that. Is this when's the last time you remember a sports trade focused solely on spite? Everybody involved, both players, the teams, the coaches. Because remember, DeMar DeRozan was kind of ruffling some feathers up in Toronto, too. So it feels like this whole thing is not a really balanced trade. Everybody involved just hated everybody.
Yeah, I mean, a trade done out of spite. I'm sure Belichick has one or two in his team.
But not this blatant. Like, okay, I could go back to the Montreal Canadiens trading Patrick Waugh because he didn't speak French. Or I guess you go more recently, P.K. Subban. But, I mean, if Kawhi's healthy, he's a top three player in the league.
But is it really shit? Because that is the running joke on Twitter. Where do you want to go? L.A. All right, let's send you to Canada instead. Like, that is funny. But let's look at it realistically. This is a Toronto Raptors team that was, the number two team in the Eastern Conference this past season. They're very deep. They got a great squad. And they're going to be a competitor in the Eastern Conference. So it's not shipping him off to, you know, a team that was bottom of the
league.
But
it's also a team that's perennially a joke. They never win in the playoffs. They just fired their head coach, who was coach of the year.
Yeah.
He's going to be the guy. I know people think Kyle Lowry is close to DeRozan's level. I don't think he is. I think he's wildly overrated. So can Kawhi go win on his own without Popovich, without a supporting cast? And yeah, win a little bit in the East. But I think basically what this Pop saying is, you want to go to the warmest, most party-friendly city in the NBA? Go to the coldest and try to beat the Celtics.
And another thing, Toronto's not a bad city. Toronto's a really nice city, and it's fun. Drake lives there. Come on.
But here's the thing. Will Drake get along with Kawhi Leonard?
Oh, definitely not. They're completely different people. The fact that Kawhi Leonard wants to be in Los Angeles, I think, is messes with my mind, because he does not strike me as that type of person. But anyway.
I think it's more about LeBron than the city itself.
That's true. That's true, obviously. And he's not going to stay. He's not committed to Toronto. But that could change. He has 1 year left in the player option. Like Paul George, exactly. So maybe he stays. Who knows? This does make them better, though. It is a net positive for the Raptors. That said, they don't pose much of a threat to the Celtics.
So you think this makes the Raptors better? Well, okay, yes. This year it makes the Raptors better. But again, DeMar DeRozan, the choker he is in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Excellent player. Excellent player. He's on a 3-year contract. Kawhi Leonard, probably, is going to bail at the end of the year. So does this really make Toronto better outside of this season? They gave up 2 years of control on DeMar DeRozan to try to win in a year that, let's be honest, even with Kawhi, they're still probably not even getting to the finals.
No one's going to go to Toronto for DeMar DeRozan. And the Celtics are going to be good for the next 5 to 10 years, and the Sixers are going to be good for the next 5 to 10 years. The Raptors, they need to act with desperation, don't they?
But desperation this year, why not trade DeRozan for picks? Why not trade DeRozan for somebody who's going to help you more long-term than a guy who's going to be there 1 year and then leave for nothing? Unless Toronto's going to deal him at the deadline, I don't really see what their end game is in this trade other than getting rid of DeMar DeRozan.
And maybe that was it. I don't know.
Again, that's my point off the top. I think that was it.
Then maybe what it is they just are not realistic about where they're at. And I agree with you. I don't think this is a move that puts them over the top in a sense that they are a legitimate finals contender. I don't think they're going to be a legitimate challenge to the Celtics. But maybe they do think so. So it's going to be interesting to see it play out because there's going to be growing pains there in Toronto. It's just a matter of whether or not they can convince him to stay long term, and I think that's part of the appeal for the Raptors. That said, I don't think it's that bad of a deal. I get it. DeRozan wasn't going to win you anything. We've seen what he can do in the playoffs. Nothing that impressive. Kawhi has been good in the playoffs in the past, and maybe at the very least they look at it as a short-term option to try to contend now.
Let's get into the other big NBA story from today, a little bit more local, a lot more local, and that is that Marcus Smart was disgusted. Marcus Smart hurt Marcus Smart that the Celtics hadn't reached out to him. That was the report. Then we see him all chummy with Brad and Danny at Summer League. Sounds like there's at least some numbers on the table now. Something may be, I almost said intimate, imminent.
Eminent,
long
yes.
day. Imminent. looks like it's going to be 4 years. And there's been varying reports anywhere. It sounds like from anywhere.
46 to 52 is the
46
range.
To 52 is the range. So that's anywhere from what, like 11 to 14 per?
11 to 13.
Something like yeah. 11 to 13. And
a
I think
little over 11. Yeah.
I said on this show a couple months ago, I think it may have been during the playoffs, that my ideal contract for Marcus Smart was anywhere 12 to 14, 4 years. I was willing to go as high as 15. I know there's some people who are upset about the years, and I just don't understand. I don't understand why you don't want this guy for 4 years. I made this point before, but I'll make it again because clearly people don't understand. How many times are the Celtics going to meet the Warriors in the finals in the next 4 years? I'd say at least twice.
Yeah.
I'd say probably more than one time. Marcus Smart defends Steph Curry like nobody else can in their last four games against the Warriors, the Celtics. The three games with Marcus Smart, Steph Curry scored a combined 48 points. The one game without Marcus Smart, he scored 49. Scal said it. You'll hear him say it later on in the show. It's going to be tough to beat the Warriors even with Marcus Smart. Without him, it's impossible. So I'm all in on 4 years. I think they got good money. Doesn't seem like he's going to be too upset. There's going to be too much ill will about the deal, maybe taking a little longer than it should have or a little longer than he'd like it to. But if the Celtics can lock this in at this money, look, they're bringing back their own player. You can't say, oh, what an addition. But if they really do want to win a title this year, not just coast through the East and get curb stomped by the Warriors like LeBron did. If they really want to be a serious title contender, they had to make this move and they got it at good dollar value.
For the role that he plays and for the money that he's going to get, I don't think the Celtics can do better. I don't think there's a better acquisition.
What was it? LaVine got like, what, 4 over 80?
He got a lot of money.
And yeah. I think Marcus Smart, now they're completely different players, but let's just talk like, I don't know, overall on 2K, overall what they bring to your team, what they mean, I don't think Zach LaVine is a $30 million better than Marcus Smart.
Oh, no chance. And especially with what Marcus Smart. But the thing with Marcus Smart is he can't be your best player. He needs to be on a team like the Celtics where he can come off the bench and be that elite defender and shut down whoever the best guard on the other squad is.
Right. A crappy team couldn't sign Marcus Smart because it wouldn't matter. There's maybe five or six teams it would make sense for Marcus Smart to go for. And we talked about, I don't remember if we talked about this or if I talked about it on Dirty Water last week. The teams that could actually take him, that could actually use him properly, that had cap, it was three. The Celtics, the Sixers, which is scary, and the Lakers, which is scary. Yeah. So, like, I guess part of the reason I'm so into this is not only did the Celtics get him back, not only did they get him back, like, locked up long-term, not only did they get him back for a good dollar value, you're not going to be playing grudge matches against Marcus Smart in the Eastern Conference semis when he's on Philly, which scared the hell out of me, that proposition. So, big win for Danny Ainge today.
Yeah, definitely.
Or whenever the contract signed.
Yeah, and again, he hasn't signed it yet, but the reports are coming out from Jordan Schultz, from Adam Himmelsbach, from Adrian Wojnarowski. So it seems like it is going to be a done deal. And I don't know how you can complain about it. Even the contract length, like 4 years, in 2 years, it's going to be look like a really great deal. It's going to be an awesome deal for the Celtics, and Danny Ainge is going to look great again. So I think you got to love this outcome if you're the Celtics. You got a guy who comes off the bench who really is a spark. And you talk about the five teams that he could go to that would make sense. They're all winners.
Right.
And that kind of is a reflection of what type of player Marcus Smart is.
The Kings wanted to sign. What the hell was that? That didn't make sense.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, just to play devil's advocate here. Let's say Marcus Smart sucks. Let's say he punches more pictures and gets in more fights with Instagram models and he's a mess. The end of that contract, that last year, that's a very valuable trade commodity. A one-year, $11 million contract, and that's, correct me if I'm wrong, going into the 2021 season. And we've all heard that draft be talked up because NBA executives think that is the year that they're going to get rid of the one-and-done rule, and you'll essentially have two top classes in that draft. Mm-hmm. You'll have the freshmen who had to go to college and the top high school players the first year they can come out. So worst case,
a top 10 pick would be amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, even if Marcus Smart sucks, you have a very valuable trade commodity in a year that trades are going to be tough. So overall, good things for the Celtics.
There's also, I'm pretty sure, and we can check this, but I'm pretty sure that Memphis Grizzlies pick could...
That's 2021. That's unprotected. I think it's like top three.
But, I mean, they'd have to be within the protected picks within the next three seasons or three drafts. So the chances of that happening are probably slim. But it's a possibility, and imagine if that pick comes back to get you a stud.
What was that, Jeff Green? What was that for, Jeff Green?
I don't even remember.
Something like that.
It's
tough to track at this point. Look, the Brooklyn picks are gone. They are. But there's still a lot of assets the Celtics have, and they got Marcus Smart back, hopefully. So it's all looking good. I actually got a chance yesterday at the Dr. Leonard, Dr. Lepreski charity event down in Boston. Celebrity bartending event. Rob Ninkovich was there. Wes Welker was there. Sebastian Vollmer was there. Like, his hands are huge, by the way.
Vollmer?
Oh, yeah, he swallowed my hand.
Oh, yeah.
It was, and then Scal elbowed his way in, too, with all the former Patriots. So I got a chance to sit down with Scal. Actually, really interesting conversation. We talked about a little bit about his playing career, his coaching career, which people forget about sometimes at Golden State. Well, I asked him what it was like coaching Steph Curry. He's got an interesting take on Steph Curry. And again, of course, what the Celtics have coming up. We also touched on something we've talked about on the show, Lipowitz, the Big Three League, Ice Cube's Big Three League. So all that in the next segment, my conversation with Scal. And then we will be back. You know we got to talk about the All-Star Game. Keep it here. You're listening to Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Alex Barth here with Brian Scalabrine, former Boston Celtic, currently with NBC Sports Boston. And Scal, I want to start there. When it goes to from playing for a team to covering a team, and you made that transition pretty quickly, what was the strangest thing for you? What was the most unexpected thing from going to being a guy in the locker room to the guy in the media scrum?
So I kind of did it twice, right? The first time I did it, a lot of those guys were my teammates, right? I was playing with Garnett and Pearson. Those guys were there. Then I went and coached the Warriors. And when I came back, like, it was all really fresh new faces except for Rajon Rondo, which they ended up trading him. So, like, I don't have that player relationship, locker room relationship with the guys now. So I think it's a little bit easier now. When I first started out, I it was a hard thing to adjust just to say things like, man, Garnett should have been there on that rotation. I would always hold back. But now I just like call it how I see it.
Did they, when the first time you did, when it was your former teammates, did they ever give you a hard time about it? Did you ever hear from them about stuff you said on air?
No, because I wasn't very good on air. I'd always hold back, right? But now I don't. It's just like, you got to be honest. You got to be who you are. And if you see something, you got to say it, because that's going to lead to something else that happens down the road. And it could be the whole identity of the game, could be defensive rotation. And if you hold back in the first quarter, it's kind of hard to turn that back on later, right? So from there, I sort of adapted to, I'm going to treat it like a coach. And I'm going to look at things that the coach would try to point out when we're watching. And people at home as well, the viewer, there are things that have to be done in order to win basketball games, to win championships. And I'm trying to point that out. And not in a negative way, but just like to inform people, it's maybe not always how you see it with the guy who's scoring. It might be someone else's fault on the weak side.
And you had the coaching stint, too, out in Golden State. Obviously, to see what that team has become now from when you were there. What were your indications? What did you see in guys like Steph Curry, the guys that were there from the beginning? And what have they changed between when you were there and now that you think has really helped their game?
Well, the ball movement is one. And when I was there, it was interesting because I coached and then I announced that I was coming back. In that fabulous letter, I'm coming home. And then I sort of did some media interviews after that, and I thought Steph Curry was basically what we would call in the NBA a pocket pass away from being an MVP. He needed to get rid of the ball when people double-teamed him, and if he can learn how to do that, and with the addition of Draymond Green and the ascension of Draymond Green, it helped him, and I thought he would be an MVP guy. Now, back-to-back MVP, one of the greatest teams ever. I didn't see any of that, but I knew that they would be a championship-caliber team, and that's partly the reason why I went there. When I saw them in the Denver series and the San Antonio series the year before I took the job, I thought they were a championship-caliber team. I was just a year too early on that, and they went from 250 passes a game to 320 passes a game, and that's their average. Sometimes they're upwards of 340, 350, and when they do that, they are unbeatable because of their shooting.
So what is now the 2018 Warriors, 3 out of 4 championships? You were in the room. It was a couple years ago, but you were in the room. What's the weakness?
Well, I think it's complacency. I think for Steph Curry and all, I think more than anybody, whether he gets bored with the game or he gets complacent out there during times or he gets loose with the basketball, like that could be their downfall, even though to me it keeps him loose in his ability to go on those runs or to be – what was he, 1 for 9 from the field and then hit that shot with 56 seconds to go in the NBA Finals in Game 3. Maybe that's what allows him to be great is his ability not to put too much pressure on himself. But sometimes they get a little loose with the ball, and if you can take advantage of that off of turnovers, then you can go and end up beating them, but it's going to be tough.
And, I mean, we know how strong the Celtics are defensively, and that seems to be the matchups that's lining up that we could see next May and June, the Celtics and the Warriors. There's still some time, obviously, between now and the beginning of the season. We don't totally know what this team is going to look like, but last year...
What team?
Boston Celtics.
We know what they're going to look like.
Okay, well, then let me ask you this. Jump ahead a little bit. Marcus Smart, does this team need him back? How bad does this team need him back?
To win a championship?
To win a championship.
Yeah, I think they need him back. I don't think they can win without him. I don't even know if they can win at all with Marcus, right? Like, beating the Warriors is a tough thing to do, but if I'm going against the Warriors, I want Marcus Smart on my team. You need defensive versatility against those guys because of all the different players that they have. You got to have Marcus on your team. But it's a numbers game. If that number comes in somewhere else at 13, 14, 15, 16 million, which I don't know what the number – I don't know. Like, it's mind-boggling to me how Isaiah Thomas just signed for $2 million when Zach LaVine signed for $20 million, right? I don't really know what guys are going to end up getting paid. But to me, if they can retain Marcus, they have to do that because I believe that this team is right on the verge.
If they don't, do you see another guy maybe that slipped under the radar in the last couple of years? For instance, when Avery Bradley left, the defensive presence became Marcus Smart.
I don't see.
Is there another guy in the pipeline?
Don't ask me like the underrated question or another guy because I know that these guys were going to be good. Like I knew Terry Rozier was going to be good. You know, he's a guy that has to do more defensively. Jaylen Brown, he developed on the defensive end. The Jason Tatum thing was mind-blowing for a rookie. I would say the same thing about Donovan Mitchell over in Utah. Like this team has exactly what they need. No Kyrie, no Gordon Hayward. They were a couple possessions away from going to the NBA Finals. With those guys here, even if they don't have Marcus, their goal should be to not just make it. It should be to win a championship. And I do think Marcus makes it a whole lot easier. I think Brad Stevens would agree.
What is the biggest change stylistically to the team you think we'll see with Gordon Hayward back on the floor?
Another ball handler who can get to the paint and make a great decision. He's an underrated passer. No one ever talks about that. He's an underrated athlete. I don't know how he's going to be coming back from the ankle, but right. I'm assuming with all the treatment they did that he'll be fine. But he's a guy who could turn the corner, get to the lane. Tatum did it at times. Brown does it at times. Gordon Hayward is consistently doing it. He's been doing that since he was playing at Butler. So I think it's another ball handler decision maker when he does get to the lane.
And do you think that will result in Kyrie playing more off the ball and maybe playing a more shooter role? And how will that help them?
I would love to see these guys play less minutes than they did last year. Kyrie at 33. It'd be great to see Kyrie at 30 all year long, you know, managing all the injuries. And then when the playoffs start, these guys are all fresh, ready to go.
One last question for you before we wrap it up. The Big Three League, you've got to be a part of that. And we see these kind of post-career leagues popping up, the Flag Football League as the counterpart to the NFL, the Big Three League. What is it like to be a part of that and to get back out and play?
It's fantastic. Like, Ice Cube is a very hands-on owner as far as, like, who's playing who, how the referees call the games, you know, what the uniforms look like, and they treat us like first class all the way. You know, I'm every Friday I go to Detroit, Miami, Oakland to play, and it's great being around these guys. I just wish I would play better. That's it, man. Like, for me to hang on to the NBA, I had to work like 8 hours a day. Now I'm doing all this media stuff. I don't have 8 hours a day to work. But, man, it's great to be around these guys and playing against Amari Stoudemire, Nate Robinson, Jermaine O'Neal. You know, like, all these guys are all tremendous, and it's fun competing at that level. When I play rec league and I beat up on guys like you, it does not stroke my ego one bit.
I would stand no chance. I will admit that. I'm not one of these scallywag guys.
Yeah, see?
I have no delusions.
And it doesn't do anything for me. So now, like, me getting roasted by guys, I feel normal again.
If you could pick any two guys that you played with in your career, college or in the NBA, to form the ultimate three-person team of your teammates, who would you take?
Yeah, I can only take two.
You can take two. It's a 3-on-3, so you got to be one.
I guess Pearson Garnett.
There you go. Hard to argue with that.
Yeah,
Brian Scalabrine. Thank you very much.
You got it. See ya.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to the Calling It podcast. Alex Barth and Alex Lebowitz, thanks to Scal for sitting down with me yesterday. Thanks to everybody, Dr. Leonard, and everybody who set that event up. It really was a great time. There's more clips. Like I talked about, there were a couple Patriots there at the event as well. You can check those clips out. Mike Petralia talked to them. You can check the videos out on the CLNS YouTube page, and they're all cut together as this week's Patriots Beat podcast. If you check out on Twitter, @PatriotsCLNS, you can hear all that there. So I got home from that whole event, and then, boom, the All-Star Game's on last night, the MLB All-Star Game, the Midsummer Classic. No longer means anything, first of all, which, thank God. That was so dumb.
I forgot. In my update this morning, I was like, the AL has the home field. And I just completely forgot that they did away with that rule. But it's probably for the
good
best.
On them. No, good on them for doing that. And then, so it was a decent game. You saw Chris Sale pitch. He pitched well. I think JD got a hit. Mookie went over. Kimbrel didn't get used originally, which they gave who was it two innings? They gave these two random pitchers two innings. They didn't use Kimbrel and they didn't use Chapman because, as always, the MLB knows what the fans want to see, and it's middle relievers going out. They don't want to see guys throwing 100, but the NL tied it up late, and then we went to extra innings, which that's what I want. I want to stay up later, and it was a slow game. It was like 11:30 at this point. They started late. It was a slow game. That's what I want to do at 11:30 at night. We're not going to get up early next morning. Watch extra innings of an exhibition game. I barely stay up for Red Sox extra innings. Why are – if the All-Star game doesn't mean anything, which kudos to them, they figured that out. It shouldn't. But if the game doesn't mean anything, why the hell are we playing extra innings? What are we doing here? I almost said Bud Selig.
Rob Manfred.
Right. What are we doing here, Rob? Come on, Robert. I'm not staying up for your meaningless game. And there's – again, if the AL had actually used all the pitchers like they were supposed to, there would have been pitchers left. There's no subs left. And I know there's like certain rules or whatever for what you do in an All-Star game. That should be unnecessary. Tie the damn thing. They used to do it. They did it in the 70s. 03. They did it in the 80s. 03, they tied it.
Yeah.
You always hear people complaining, oh, they didn't have pitch counts back in my day. The pitchers were tougher. Oh, the batters used to not take as long out of the box back in the day. Back in my day, they tied the damn All-Star game. You want to bring back some nostalgia, do that.
And to be fair, that 2003 All-Star game went like 13 or 14 innings.
Right. You know, play the 10th, play the 11th. Cool. Okay. Go, and then I'm going to bed.
I agree with you. It's very long, and I just think that's a reflection of the game itself. But it says something that the best players in the game, because that's what we saw, the best players in the game, they take a very, very long time.
Oh,
they're
brutal.
Super deliberate. It's horrible, especially when you don't start the game until 8:30. Originally, on ESPN.com, it said 7:30 first pitch. It was 7:30 ceremony starts, and then the game starts at 8:35. I don't want to stay up super late when I got to be up really early in the morning. You alienate fans like myself, and that's annoying. That said, the All-Star game has lost its luster for me anyway. I mean, I'm not as into it. The Home Run Derby, not as into it. There's no big names. It's not what it used to be. And maybe that's because I've grown up a little bit and I'm not a child, depending on who you ask.
No, your childhood quarterback's still playing football. That's still true. A child. That's how it counts.
I'm not.
Make that argument in 2 years.
I'm in my 20s now. So I'm no longer a teenager. So maybe that's what it is. But yeah, it's not nearly as exciting. And when you match that with the fact that the AL was far better on paper than the NL, there's just a lot more big names. Yeah, you're just not into it. It's just not nearly as entertaining. But realistically, what All-Star game is entertaining?
Well, go back to like 99. You look at the players. You had Hall of Famers, or should be Hall of Famers, up and down the lineup. Now,
but that 99 All-Star game, that was in the steroid era. Had guys mashing. You had Ted Williams go out in the field.
I did this with my dad like last year, 2 years ago for the All-Star game. We're looking at All-Star lineup team from the 60s, the 70s, and it's all-time greats.
That's true.
Nick Markakis going to be on that list? Nick Markakis, good player, not to take anything away. Is Nick Markakis going to be on the list of all-time players when it's all said and done?
Definitely
when you go
not.
Back and look in 30 years, are you going to tell your kids, oh, yeah, Nick Markakis, right?
I'll say he was a decent.
Is Scooter Gennett going to be on that list? Okay. The AL team was not bad, but is Jed Lowry going to be on that list? Is Mitch Moreland going to be on this? I love Mitch Moreland. Mitch Moreland's not going to be on that list. Charlie Morton threw 2 innings last night. Charlie Morton threw 2 innings, and we didn't get to see Craig Kimbrell. I'll remember Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell may be a Hall of Famer. Charlie Morton's not going to be a Hall of Famer.
But go through the American League lineup, that starting lineup.
Should be that every year, both teams.
I agree. Maybe we're having a downtime in the MLB. I think players have gotten better. Numbers are going down a little bit with individuals. So I don't know. You don't have the same star power, but is that a reflection of the talent or is that a reflection of the popularity of the sport? Because you look at the best player in the league, and this point's been made before. It's one of those Mike Trout, arguably. He's boring. He's stale.
Did you see the study that came out, his Q rating, which is essentially public awareness, public popularity of an athlete or celebrity or a brand, whoever.
Who's he behind?
Did you see that? Well, it's not who he was behind. The closest comp in terms of public awareness of the brand or figure for Mike Trout in the NBA is Kenneth Faried, who was just traded in a salary dump to the Brooklyn Nets from Denver. So
he's a great rebounder. Come on.
And I mean, like, he has no personality. You saw the interview last night. He's an outstanding player, but he has no personality. He plays at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Where most of the people are watching. Right? I mean, Bryce Harper, I think, should be a bigger star than he is. I don't know why he's not. It makes sense to me why Mike Trout is not a big star.
Well, he's also on the second most popular team in his own market.
Who?
Mike Trout.
Yes.
Because he got the Dodgers. It's the same
market. No, it totally makes sense why Mike Trout's not a big deal. But it's kind of sad to see him. Then you talk about the Home Run Derby, and I think we had this discussion around the Slam Dunk Contest, too. Like, Slam Dunk Contest, Home Run Derby used to be appointment viewing.
Yeah,
I would record that. I would watch it over and over. I still have my VHS tapes. I still have my VHS tape of the 99 All-Star game. I'd watch it if I knew where I could find a VHS player. I guess then you get it converted. But, I mean, McGuire, Sosa, Griffey, right? Who the hell was in it on Monday? Like, you had Harper. Harper's a big name. They always get a
Kyle
big name
Schwarber.
From the hometown team. Who the hell's Kyle Schwarber? Honestly. If Mike Trout is Kenneth Faried, who the hell is Kyle Schwarber?
Oh, yeah, Kyle Schwarber, Daniel
right?
Price.
Exactly. They have the whole weird thing with the format and the rounds. No. Do you remember the year that Josh Hamilton hit like 40 bombs in a round? And it was every couple of years somebody would break
Bobby
the single
Abreu.
Round record. Right, Bobby Abreu did it 1 year. Like, and it was just hit the most home runs. That was all you had to do. There was no format. There was no time, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The concept that people are mad about somebody cheating in a home run derby, you shouldn't be able to cheat in a home run derby. You get the pitch, you hit the ball, that's it. You can't cheat. And the slam dunk contest is the same way. It's gone so downhill because they can't get the big stars to do it because nobody cares because they've butchered the event. They try to keep it up with the modern times, and they just make it worse.
Well, what the NBA should do, I'll start with the NBA, then I'll go to the MLB. The NBA should incentivize it put it, have it be a $5 million purse. First place gets three. Second, like, and so if you do that, you'll get players to participate. Yeah. The Home Run Derby. Would you want J.D. Martinez or Mookie Betts participating in the Home Run Derby?
Do I, as a Red Sox fan?
Yes.
No, it screws up your swing.
So if you were in the MLB, would you want to do that? Would you? Because we've seen players participate in the Home Run Derby. We saw it with Aaron Judge last year. And then the second half of the season, huge decline. Well, I don't think that's any coincidence.
Then talk to the players. Then go to the players and say, how can we change this event? Because, look, they take batting practice. Batting practice.
But batting practice, you're going for liners. You're not going for home runs.
So maybe now that we have all these sabermetrics, maybe I have, like, I guess it's not as exciting, but like an exit velocity contest. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Hardest pitch contest. Yeah, that, you're going to break some arms with that. Figure something out.
I think the days of the Home Run Derby being a big event, they're gone because
well, those
players
went
are
with
so
steroids.
Much more aware.
Those went with steroids.
No, I don't think it has anything to do with steroids. Man, I think it has to do with awareness and the fact that players realize it's not good for their swing, and what makes the money isn't winning a Home Run Derby contest. It's hitting well during the regular
then
season.
Then talk to the players and figure out a way to bring it back because it was good.
But is there a way?
Maybe it's the players. Maybe the players are doing something that's screwing up their swing now with all the how in depth they get with all the measurements and this and that. Never screwed up Griffey's swing. Never. He won what, three? Two or three of them. It never screwed up his swing.
Certain players have. So Bryce Harper and Ken Griffey Jr. are two players who have a swing that is made for a Home Run Derby.
Ortiz did it.
Competition.
He was fine.
Ortiz, he also has a swing that's made for those competitions. So maybe the fundamentals have changed. I'm not a baseball coach. I haven't been studying the game forever. I couldn't tell you that. But that's just a thought. Maybe the swings have changed. You know, J.D. Martinez and Mookie Betts, they're two guys who do not have swings tailored for a Home Run Derby, specifically J.D. Martinez. So you want the big names, they're not going to want to do it. Simply put, I think the slam dunk competition is something you can bring back and something that can become a legitimate competition, but they got to put more
money. I'll tell you how to bring the slam dunk contest back.
Tell me.
12-foot hoops.
Okay.
Just like uniform. Like, I know somebody did that once as a dunk, 12-foot hoops.
But as players just don't want to participate in general. You think that would incentivize them to?
At least then the ones who. Okay, so there's two ways you can go about it. You either make the better players participate, or you try to make it more entertaining with the players you have. So I guess 12-foot hoops would be making it more entertaining with the players. Or just do it as slam ball. You know what slam ball is, right?
Yes.
If you don't know what slam ball is, go on YouTube. It's basketball, but the entire floor is a bunch of trampolines, and it's full contact. And it's awesome.
Joel Embiid would do it and break through the trampoline.
Oh, Joel Embiid would murder people. Was it Robbie Ishmael, I think, Quadre Ishmael, one of them. They're wide receivers in the 90s. You can Google those names. The Rocket and the Missile were their nicknames. One of them was a slam ball coach. The other one coaches lingerie football. Proud parents. But doing a slam ball. Have a slam ball. Like, obviously not full contact, but have an all-star slam ball game. You know what the best event is of all-star weekend in the MLB? And in the NBA, actually. The celebrity game. You see Bill Nye knock that single?
No.
You can't tell me you didn't have fun watching Bill Nye, because you know he calculated that all out and everything. No, watching Bill Nye, like 60-year-old frail Bill Nye, hold a bat and try to swing it and actually get a hit, that was awesome.
The fact that he looks so unhealthy makes me not trust his opinion on science nearly as much.
He's a scientist. He's a scientist.
No, the NHL,
been stuck in the lab.
The NHL does it the best. They have the divisions. Yes. And they also had the skills competitions and the slot. That their weekend is amazing.
Well, they do right the three on three. They change the game. Do this then MLB.
And it's incentivized. They pay the players.
Right. How about this MLB kickball game?
So made different sport. You know what they used to do in the NFL back in the 90s? Where they did the tug of war. And that was amazing. Tell me you wouldn't want to see the offensive lineman of the AFC going against the offensive lineman or defensive lineman of the NFC. That would be incredible. Rip out of sockets. It would be awesome.
It's just make it fun. Open it up again. You know, maybe, again, MLB, you do kickball. NBA, you do a three-on-three tournament. We heard Scal talk about how fun that was. NFL, do flag. You've seen the videos of the retired players flag. Football League, Mike Vick slinging it all over the field. Seneca Wallace slinging it all over the field. So... I mean, yeah, there's potential there, but right now, and then there's also the fact that, and we need to wrap this up, but there's also the fact that they do it in the middle of the season. Like, why are you awarding the best player? Like, do it at the end of the year. It makes no sense to me that they...
For the MLB?
Yeah, it's like, okay, we've hit a... It's not even the middle. It's, okay, we've hit a random point in the season. Let's right now decide who all the best players are. It's so arbitrary. I get you need a break, but give them a break and then play the game at the end of the year.
I think you'd have to shorten the season before doing that.
You know what they should do? And I'm a big proponent of this in the NFL because people talk about they don't want to do the Pro Bowl at the end of the year. Make it, and you could do this for all the leagues, make it the event that kicks off the season. So instead of the Hall of Fame game in the NFL, have the previous year's players play like a flag game at the Football Hall of Fame to start the season. In the MLB, play a game down in Florida to start the season with all the best players from the year before. Same with the NBA, same with the NHL. Do it right before the preseason starts to welcome everybody back to the sport with the players from the previous year. That's how I would do it.
That's an idea. That's an idea. But the guys are in midseason form.
So what? But nobody's trying in any of these games anyway.
Chris Sale threw over 100. He was trying. Max Scherzer was
Chris Sale's
to
a freak.
As he could.
Chris Sale is in midseason form 13 months of the year. Like, let's be honest.
That's true.
Like, Chris Sale could strike guys out in December. I'm not too worried about that. But
not so much in September and October. But
we'll see. Oh, that's a whole other conversation. We didn't talk much Red Sox today. We'll get into that obviously next week. We will have our training camp preview. Not even next week, Monday. It's like 4 days away, the next show. We'll have our training camp preview. That starts on Thursday. And we'll probably relay some of the Marcus Smart deals. Well, anything else that happens. To stay caught up on the show, you can check us out on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Follow CLNS on Twitter as well at CLNSmedia. So, again, we'll be back next Monday. Thanks for hanging on a couple extra days to wait for the show. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth from La Lasher Park. This is pretty cool. We might have to do this again.
Yeah, we will.
From La Lasher Park, this has been Calling It, powered by CLNS. Talk to you next time. Bye.